Hello and welcome to At the Movies with Mike and Marie, a show where two film professors talk about movies. I'm Marie Westhaver.
I'm Mike Giuliano.
And today we're going to talk about actor Michael Caine, who has a very long and illustrious career, but actually he started off in 1933 in London as Maurice Joseph Micklewhite. Left school at 15, did working class jobs, joined the British Army, served in the Korean War. He did not go to drama school, so he's outside of our usual intro, Mike, where we talk about how, you know, everybody does all this work on stage and then, you know, transfers their talent over to the movies. I wanted to mention that his mom was a char lady and his father was a fish market porter. So he comes by his working class credentials, honestly, and eventually changes his name to Michael Caine for the movie The Caine Mutiny, which he said later he realized that Michael Caine, the only word you can get out of his name by rearranging the letters is cinema, which he said was a happy accident he discovered while doing a crossword puzzle. So Mike, I know that you're planning to teach British film in fall 2021. So how about setting the stage for what that class will be like and where Michael Caine fits into the course and British film in general?
Well, he's actually not part of the course to any great extent, but he is in the sense that he's of a generation of actors who, you know, they come up in the mid 20th century, and some of them, like Michael Caine, have got real working class backgrounds. And where that plays to advantage, and this is where it does play into the British film course I'm teaching in the fall, is there's a whole phenomenon in British culture in the late 1950s and early 1960s, the angry young man, if you will. You see it in British theater, you see it in film. It's sort of the British equivalent of the French New Wave, a whole young generation. They're full of energy and full of anger, frankly, too, at their elders, at the system, at the establishment. And so in terms of actors of his generation, you'll find, you know, people like Albert Finney and so on, you know, Richard Burton. I mean, you know, they do the classics, they know the classics, but you know what? They also have that raffish working class quality. Juvenile delinquents, even as they get into their 20s, if you will. And so that's something that you see in Michael Caine's career for sure. I love those working class origins. And Marie's absolutely right that even among that cohort of actors, his generation, he really was working class. I mean, when your dad has a Cockney accent and he worked in a fish market and your mom is a cleaning woman, I mean, come on, you don't get much more, you know, plain than that. And the fact that there's a kind of earthiness, a kind of integrity, even when he's playing characters who ironically don't have a lot of integrity, there's just kind of a real quality that he brings to it. And unlike some of his peers, he doesn't have quite as much, what do you call it, like classical training. A lot of his learning, if you will, is on the job. He actually makes his film debut in the mid-1950s. And that's the time when he's also changing his name. As Marie noted, you know, when you have a name like, think about it, Maurice Joseph Micklewhite, that's a lot to put on the marquee, you know? And also, it's not just that it's like a really long name, which can be cumbersome for an actor, at least it was thought to be so. But the fact that, you know, you're packaging yourself, you're thinking about yourself as a talent. The all-time great example, fittingly, is in British film history in terms of name changes. I mean, how many people would want to go see a movie starring Archie Leach? And yet, you know, when he went to Hollywood and went Hollywood, if you will, I mean, the fact that Archie Leach became Cary Grant, that's really significant. You know, what's a better name on the marquee? And so you see Michael Caine doing that. But what's funny is in Hollywood, oftentimes, it would be the studio bosses. It's almost like the equivalent of an immigrant coming into Ellis Island and the official can't quite read your name or it's just too long or too many consonants, if you will. You know, at Ellis Island, they suddenly shorten your name and that becomes your family heritage is this new name or shortened name. So flip it back to actors. In Hollywood, it most often would be an agent or a producer, a studio boss who says, you know, you're never going to be a star with that name. And all the famous examples, you know, Frances Gumby becomes Judy Garland, all that stuff. But, you know, what's a more saleable name in that commercial sense? Now, Michael Caine is one of those actors who gives himself a new name. And he's, you know, thinking about what to come up with. And so much at this point is by chance. It's almost arbitrary. He's sitting in Leicester Square in 1954, decides he wants to be an actor now. What should he call himself? He looks up, there's a movie theater marquee and the Caine Mutiny, you know, the picture that came out that year. And he sees the name Caine. He thinks, you know, and he goes for that. And so there's that convenience of a nice, short, you know, punchy name that you can remember easily. But secondly, I think it was in his autobiography, he mentioned that he also was thinking about Cain and Abel, even though that Cain doesn't have the E on it. He was thinking like in some ways that he was like Cain, you know, he already was a bit of a bad boy, if you will, and he was thinking that he could identify with Kane. So you might say that he should just head right to the therapist or something, but in his case, he headed right to the career and starts working then in the mid-50s, but doesn't really start to break through for almost another decade.
Now, I know that the movie that most people associate with him is Alfie from 1966, which I just watched for the first time a couple of days ago, because my introduction to Michael Caine was when we got HBO for the first time. And all of a sudden, there were all these movies that he was in. And the one I remember first is Educating Rita, which is interesting given that, you know, he's this guy with this Cockney accent and considered, you know, not the accent that you want to emulate if you want to sound cultured or knowledgeable, whatever. But that was my first exposure to him. And then, you know, he was in Hannah and Her Sisters and, you know, some other things. So, you know, when I think of Michael Caine, I think of this very gentlemanly, nice guy. And it's funny to go back to something as early as Alfie and see, oh, that isn't how he started out at all. Alfie is this misogynistic pig of a man who, you know, womanizes his way through everybody he meets, he seems to take to bed. And yet he somehow still manages to be incredibly charming. So it's very dated in the way when you watch it, you think, wow, could you do this movie now and actually have the main character talk about the women that he knows as it, you know, what it does and what it says and where it goes, etc. It's such a shocking movie in that way. But he does say about Alfie, he says, you know, to be a movie star, you have to carry a movie. And to carry a movie where you play the title role is the supreme example. The third thing for a British actor is to do it in America. The fourth is to get nominated for an award. That picture did all four things for me. So Mike, I want to get your take on Alfie. And also, was that where you discovered him or was it somewhere else?
Well, when you mentioned him as a pig of a man, a lot of his early films in particular, there's a raffish charm, sometimes with a Cockney edge to it, sometimes a bit more gentlemanly. But in any event, some of the characters he plays are not such good people, such nice people. And some of the films themselves have dated a bit in terms of what we would consider acceptable. The misogyny is just like, you know, off the charts almost in a film like Alfie. And so I don't think it plays today as it would play then. But again, I'm fixating on the term you use. I love when you call him a pig of a man because you're not the first one to call him a pig. There's a genealogy to this word usage. And this is a famous anecdote, actually. Because he played characters like Alfie and became famous for that, that didn't always go over well with female audiences, you know, even I'll say back in the mid-60s. And what I mean by that is, at that time, you wouldn't have had as much overt commentary as you and I are having right now in terms of, you know, the kind of character he is, misogyny. I mean, yeah, it might get mentioned, but a lot of the reviews, if you look at them, we'll talk about him as a bad boy, you know, a rogue, a charmer, this and that, and not so nice to women. Maybe it goes as far as saying that. But in terms of that word pig, Gloria Steinem, of all people, really locked horns. She's always despised him as an actor. And she actually had drawn up a list. I don't have the list with me here, but I do know that she drew up a list of like men that she thought were male chauvinist pigs. And Gloria Steinem put Michael Caine at the top of her list of, and I need quotation marks here, quote, international male chauvinist pigs, close quote. So Marie, you're on the right wavelength with Gloria Steinem. Now back to your question per se, the crucial period for him in terms of a breakthrough is 1964, 1965. Alfie was the discovery film for most everyone. Discovery film for me actually came out the year before. He made a film called Zulu in 1964. And in that one, he's really not playing a Cockney rogue or whatever. He's playing a rather effete young officer. So he already has that versatility to play it in a bit more respectable way. But the film itself is an example of, and again, when you asked me about the British film course, we watch a film in that course called The Four Feathers from 1939, which is an example of what's called a British Empire film. Back when there was a British Empire, these are films that either overtly celebrated that empire with all the racism and all the you know, worrisome aspects of that, or at least like covertly, implicitly had that built into the story. So we do actually see an example of an empire film, and we talk about Zulu. So although we're not watching a Michael Caine in my British film course offered this fall, you know, we are actually, you know, involving him, and he does get quite a bit of mention that way. So anyway, back to Zulu. It's set in 1879. It's an African outpost. It's the British Army representing civilization. everybody wearing red coats as red as those theater seats behind you. Mm-hmm. Visually, it's quite sumptuous. And the director, Cy Enfield, does a terrific job of directing the action sequences. When people talk about war movies, they oftentimes mention Zulu. It has some of the best battle scenes in any film. It's just really exciting. Even though the politics of the film, the relations between the Brits and the colonized, you know, a lot of that is kind of vexing now and at least, you know, of concern. But I'll tell you what, as a film, it's really exciting at times. That was a film where he got a lot of notice. And that's the film, I don't think I saw it first run in 64, but I think it probably on television within a few years I'd seen it. And that's where, because I love Zulu as a film. And I remember noticing Michael Caine there. The second film to mention comes out in 1965, and that's The Ypres File. It's the kind of spy thriller that he would oftentimes do. He's oftentimes played either spies or gangsters, people involved in criminal intrigue, sometimes done straight as drama, oftentimes though done as comedy or at least with a sort of twinkle in the eye kind of thing. And in that one, he shows again the sort of more working class side or more schlubby, ordinary guy kind of thing. Because he's deliberately flabby. He has not worked out before, you know, shooting this film. And he's also nearsighted. And yet he's somehow the protagonist. By that, I mean, he's not a conventional movie star character. And audiences identify because like, gee, that could be me, you know, that sort of thing. And the thing that's really significant there is not just the kind of character, but even more specifically, the tone of it, the temperament. There's a kind of tongue-in-cheek British humor that comes through in a film like that. And actually, that's something in my British film course we do talk about, a certain quality you find in British comedies or even in ostensible spy thrillers that have a sense of whimsy, of irony, and so on. So Michael Caine does get mentioned in the course in respect to things like that. So anyway, Zulu, 1964, Ypres File, 1965, and then Alfie, 1965. What's it all about? Well, among other things, it's that, you know, terrific earworm of a Dionne Warwick song. Once you hear the title song, Alfie, it's always there with you. It's really one of the great examples of a film title that has a title song and they can't be separated at all, right? As I'm talking about Alfie, I'm hearing Dionne Warwick in my head, which I don't mind actually. I've always liked that song. But if you try to get it out of your head, you can't. You know what I mean? It gets locked in there. Now, back to Marie's point, he's definitely a piggish character in this. The most polite way to describe him is as a self-centered Lothario. This is the taxonomy of the character. And yet he does have a kind of debonair quality to him. There's a playboy quality. And sometimes it can be charming, even if you realize that he's not being very nice to women or just, you know, an operator, if you will. But he's got that smile. He's got that likable quality. Can you like a villain? And there's a quote from Michael Caine that I've always loved, where he's talking about the characters he's played. And he says, you know, that as far as he's concerned, there's no point in playing a villain unless you enjoy it. And you know, that's a very close paraphrase of a quote of his. And the reason I like that quote is we can say all sorts of things against Alfie as a man, as a piggish man, if you will. But the fact that the actor is clearly enjoying himself as he plays it. And by extension, how can you not, as an audience member, also enjoy it in a way? I mean, even if you're like, you know, casting aspersions at what this guy represents, it's like, but he's so good at it, you know? And in fact, he's so good at it, he actually received an Academy Award nomination for Best Actor. So there you go. It really is the breakthrough, certainly for American audiences. Zulu played here and had some notice, and Ypres File did as well. But Marie, you're absolutely right. Alfie was the big breakthrough. And to your point, Marie, for most people, that's the first film where they really noticed Michael Caine.
Well, like I said, I saw Alfie for the first time a couple of days ago, and my husband watched it with me, and he knew the song. He'd never seen the movie, but, you know, the song sort of preceded it. So it must have gotten plenty of airplay. It was new to me. I wanted to go back to something. You mentioned Albert Finney, and it's funny that you mentioned Albert Finney, Mike, because when I was watching Alfie, that was what I was thinking about, was how, oh, he's more of a leading man kind of role. He could have done Barry Lyndon. You know, and I could see him, you know, doing that sort of Albert Finney sort of role. But, you know, I've seen him in so many things where he does play that schlubby character that you mentioned. And so, you know, it just hadn't occurred to me that he was supposed to be this dashing man. So anyway, some of his other movies sort of bring that out well, like The Italian Job, which I enjoyed very much from 1969, which is he's a gold hungry thief. It's a heist film. It's got one of the best cliffhangers ever and features lots of Mini Coopers and incredibly fun to watch car chases and things like that. And he shines there too, because there he gets to be the brains behind this heist. And he does really well with comedy. In fact, he says he likes doing comedy. He likes making people laugh. And if he couldn't have been an actor or an architect, which he really wanted to be, he wanted to be a stand-up comic. Now, do you think he's got the timing for that career, Mike? Can you see him as a stand-up comic?
Well, I don't know about that, because I don't really think of him much in terms of the kind of prepared material that a stand-up comic would have. What I'm getting at is, for him, it's so invested in the character and personality. But I want to double back on what we were saying about Alfie. Even though, as you pointed out, you've just seen it for the first time recently, growing up, and as you became aware of Michael Caine, wouldn't that have somehow still been imprinted? And what I'm getting at is, Marie, that was an iconic role, and that's how he became known. What was your sense of him as an actor years back, even though you ironically hadn't seen Alfie till more recently, but just, you know, going back quite a few years as you're growing up, I mean, wasn't that still like somehow imprinted that was the film that really pushed him through?
No, I was really quite unaware. You know, I thought I had discovered him, you know, in Educating Rita. I really did. I was not aware of his earlier stuff. It's only going back, having seen him in other things. And I have a feeling that my favorite film with him in it is probably not the same as yours, because mine's The Prestige. By the time it got to The Prestige, which came out in 2006, you know, he was just so well established. You know, you always know that he's going to turn in a really interesting, fun to watch role. You know, like I loved him in, again, HBO, 1988 show Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, where he plays against Steve Martin, who is a stand-up comic, even when he's in a movie. And they play off of each other really well. And I thought that movie was really funny, and he does a great job in it, you know, as kind of playing off another comedian. Whereas in like The Italian Job, you know, that gave me a real idea of how he could carry the movie. Some of the other things that you mentioned about his roles, the Ipcress file, that's sort of a Sherlock Holmes, James Bond kind of role. You know, you go back and you look at that and you think, oh, you know, he has much more range than I thought he did. I'm just so used to him showing up to be, you know, the regular guy in the movie, and you think, oh, it's Michael Caine, and you love Michael Caine. He's always so likable. He's the perfect person to play Alfred in the Batman movies, because again, who else would be Alfred? I mean, who like can walk into the role and just be it? Michael Caine. He has that everyman quality, which I think really helps him in terms of likability. Wanted to mention, by the way, in terms of Alfie, four of his memorable films: Alfie, 1966, The Italian Job, 1969, Get Carter, 1971, and Sleuth, 1972, have all been remade. I don't know that I think any of the remakes are better. The Italian Job is certainly more exciting, because it's, you know, we have better CGI and, you know, more expectation of what you're going to put into a car chase and that kind of thing. But I think all of those films, the originals, were much better than the remakes. What did you think, Mike?
I agree so strongly. I'm generally not in favor of remakes. And if people ask why, I'll mention the films you just mentioned. You know, when you think about a film like Get Carter from 1971, where he plays a gangster, or Sleuth from 1972, that kind of mystery thriller, the original films are really effective. And yet, if we talk about the remakes, and we really probably shouldn't in some ways, because they're not worth the time, it's just they're bad films. And just, you know, if you watch the original and you watch the remake, you think, geez, why'd they bother? And you almost feel kind of, I don't want to say insulted, but you almost feel like that they're exploiting things. And they are, right? They take a familiar title that you remember fondly, let's say, from the early 70s. And then they think, well, let's do it again 20 some years later. And, you know, Michael Caine's still around. Why not cast him? And, you know, you can imagine that conference, right? And I'm thinking, if I were at the table, I'd be holding up my hands like, no, 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 please don't, please don't. Do something original, do something else. But I wanted to make an observation to kind of bridge the two periods that we've been talking about just now. That breakthrough period in the early 1960s, and I know I keep hammering this point, but Marie had mentioned it, you know, Alfie really was that kind of landmark, iconic, Academy Award nominated. People know Michael Caine. It's the breakthrough film. And, you know, a lot of people did see it then, or at least saw it later and realized that was the breakthrough. I want to bridge that period, Zulu and Ipcress File, bridge that period and what you're talking about more recently, right up through playing Alfred the butler in the Batman film, things like that. in the mid-70s, he has another good run. He's a very prolific actor. You know, he just likes to keep working. You know, what's the next job offer? And some of them are outright commercial things like, you know, why else would you do Beyond the Poseidon Adventure in 1979? You're not doing it as great art, you're doing it as a paycheck. So what? You know, he's a working actor, he keeps working. But anyway, that bridging period that I want to talk about is in the 70s there, because there's Get Carter in 1971, Sleuth 1972, and one of my favorite Michael Caine films, when you were asking about our favorites, John Huston's The Man Who Would Be King in 1975, in which he co-stars with the recently deceased Sean Connery, also with Christopher Plummer, and among the cast, Shakira Caine, who, you know, became his second wife. And again, in terms of life's accidents, you know, he's sitting in Leicester Square in 1954, looks up and sees King Mutiny on the movie marquee and changes his name to Michael Caine. You know, what if he'd seen a different movie up on the marquee? What would he become? In terms of Shakira, he had seen her in a Maxwell House coffee commercial. And it's like, oh, who's that? And then, you know, they got married in 1973. Well, what if he'd seen a different coffee commercial? You know, I mean, life has these strange turns there. But as they married, she was also an actor, and she's actually, you know, the female star, certainly among the cast in that film. It's based on a Rudyard Kipling story. It's very much about mercenary soldiers in Asia. It plays off of some of the Empire film type sensibility that I mentioned, going all the way back to Zulu in 1964. And in that respect, it's a frankly old-fashioned adventure film. You know, here it's being made in what was then like modern Hollywood. But John Huston and his cast, they were really looking back to earlier films like Zulu, 1964, like The Four Feathers, 1939. And Michael Caine can play smooth, can play suave that way, looks good in uniform when he wants to look good. And he's got that bit more range than sometimes he's given in that respect, because you're right, he can play a nice, smooth gentleman like Alfred the Butler, right? Is really an impeccable butler. And yet he can also play schlubby characters who are out of shape and you know, rough around the edges. And one definition of a schlubby character is somebody who doesn't iron his pants, right? You know, it's that kind of a thing. And when he plays a character like that, you know, the guts hanging out and the pants, you know, haven't been ironed and the belt's off center and, you know, that kind of a guy. And that's where, in roles like that, that's where you can revert to that sort of Cockney sensibility. Just, you know, plain speaking, kind of rough, this and that, and good nature. You know, that's maybe an attribute that goes all through his career, is that good natured quality. Even when he's playing bad guys or quote unquote bad guys, pigs, if you will, the good natured quality that he has. But I did want to mention The Man Who Would Be King, because I think it's really one of his finest performances.
I'm really glad that you mentioned that good natured. That is the word, that's the perfect word for him. I wanted to throw out a couple of quotes where he talks about the kinds of roles that he has taken. And he says, first of all, I choose the great roles. And if none of those come, I choose the mediocre ones. And if they don't come, I choose the ones that pay the rent. I think that's just such a great quote because, you know, he's been really prolific and not everything he's made is great. He says, I've made so many movies that are on TV at 2 a.m. that people think I'm dead. So one of the stinkers that he made was Jaws the Revenge in 1987. He says, I've never seen it, but by all accounts, it's terrible. However, I have seen the house that it built and it is terrific. And I also want to add one more thing that he says, you know, when he was coming up, he never gives advice to young actors. He said, because when he was coming up, whenever he would ask older actors for advice, they would say, just give up. And I think it's actually those kinds of quotes, those kinds of lines, I think that is his kind of quiet humor. He's not like Steve Martin, laugh out loud, that kind of funny, but he's more of a quiet, subtle, regular guy kind of jokester, if you will.
I can give you a parallel quote there where he said, as far as discrimination is concerned, I have a definite standard by which I choose films. I choose the best one available at the time I need one. And so if he wants to buy a new house, you know, he'll take on a film role and sometimes, you know, bad films, if you will. The other thing I want to quickly mention in terms of what I think are his best performances, you mentioned Educating Rita in 1983, which is why where you had discovered him, as you pointed out. He received an Academy Award nomination for Best Actor for that. He and Julie Walters are really terrific together. So that's one of his best films. The film that really should be mentioned is Hannah and Her Sisters from 1986. He wins the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor. It's one of those Woody Allen films with a really terrific cast. It's Mia Farrow, Diane Wiest, Barbara Hershey, Maureen O'Sullivan, Sam Waterston, Max von Sydow, on and on and on. And he is so good in that. And that's a rich period for him in the mid-1980s. He does Educating Rita in 1983, Hannah and Her Sisters in 1986, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels in 88, which, you know, as you mentioned, he and Steve Martin play off each other really well as con men in Riviera. They're bad guys, they're criminals, but they're so enjoyable. They're so good natured. They're fun to be around. And the other film that should be mentioned just by way of awards recognition is The Cider House Rules in 1999, for which he won another Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor. And in fact, then, you know, in more recent years, he's had additional nominations. But he's had periods like that, though. Even though he makes a lot of films, some of them, frankly, bad films, he'll have a year or a couple year period where he'll make two or three really good films. And you realize what a fine actor he is.
You know, he says that he knew he was a success when he started getting scripts that didn't have coffee stains on them, because that would mean he was the first person to read it, not that it had just been shopped around and nobody wanted to take it. One movie that he did not make that I wish he had is Frenzy. I would have loved to have had him do an Alfred Hitchcock movie. Another person who turned down being in that movie is Helen Mirren. So if we had a time machine, I would love to go back to when Hitchcock was making Frenzy and have Michael Caine do it with Helen Mirren. That would put two of my favorite British actors into a Hitchcock film. So wanted to say, as a kind of a closing thought for Michael Caine, that he says, I've had such a great time. I'd like to come back as me and do it all over again. So you got to love that. That's bringing us near the end of our sequence here. I want to mention to everybody that this is the beginning of spring semester, and Mike and I will be having a film discussion on Friday nights at 7. And you can see the whole lineup of films we will be discussing. It's kind of like a book club, but with movies. You watch them, you know, whenever you want to. And then, you know, you come to the discussions on Friday night, 7 o'clock. And you can see the list of what's coming up at howardcc.edu/filmfestivals. And don't forget to check out our other podcasts on dragondigitalradio.podbean.com. And we will see you at the movies.
See you then.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.